Welcome to Parent Talk, the show for parents brought to you by the India Community Center. I'm your host Vidya and I'm back from my vacation. Hope everyone had a relaxed and fun summer and enjoyed the Parent Talk shows brought to you by our guest hosts. Do write to me at radio@indiacc.org and let me know how that went. And if you missed any shows, I will be putting them up on indiacc.org/parenttalk so you can always catch up later. Well, I'm back now and today's show is all about going back to school and all the adjustment issues that go with it. As always, this is a live show and the call-in number is 510-770-1550 and you're most welcome to call in with your and talk to our experts about the issues that your child may be facing going back to school. My guest in the studio today is Seema Ramnathan. She's a teacher at Oliveira Elementary and also the parent of two boys. Welcome, Seema.
Thank you for having me.
I'm also pleased to welcome back Dr. Nitun Verma, who's a sleep specialist at the Washington Hospital. He's joining us via phone. Welcome, Dr. Verma.
Thank you.
So I guess as a parent, I'm noticing already the panic that I'm getting now that my kids have to go back to school next week. And this is, of course, for those of you in the Fremont School District, you know that school only starts on September 5th, whereas some of the schools have already started. But my biggest concern is, how are the kids going to wake up on time? Because they've been used to a really bad schedule over the summer. They've been sleeping late. They've been waking up late. It's been very relaxed. And I guess this is a pretty common problem. Dr. Verma, would you have any suggestions for that?
Yeah, you know, there are two techniques to get back into a routine for sleep. And it really comes down to how much time is there left before school starts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there is time left over, you can adjust the wake schedule, you know, 15 minutes a day or half an hour earlier per day. So, you know, it's more gradual change. But if school is starting very soon, it's best just to adjust now and just start planning on waking up. Similar time of school will start. However, having bright lights in the room when a child wakes up, mm-hmm. especially within 15 minutes of waking, can help adjust the circadian rhythm or the clock,
mm-hmm.
so the child will have an easier time once school starts.
Well, I'm facing a lot of resistance from my teenager, especially. I think their rhythms are particularly not suited for school hours. Is that right? I remember you saying something like that when we had our show on sleep earlier.
Yes, you know, particularly for teenagers, teenagers are night people. So, you know, if school started at noon and ended at 5 p.m., everyone will be very happy. But unfortunately, it's not possible to adjust school times. And, you know, for the teenager, it's particularly difficult to adjust for school time. And, you know, for them, what can be beneficial is, you know, if you make a plan for 3 hours before bedtime,
mm-hmm.
start creating a darker or dimmer environment in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
That will gradually adjust the clock so the teenagers will have a little bit more alertness in the morning, in
mm-hmm.
addition to what I just mentioned for the bright light.
Right. Seema, you're the parent of two boys and they've already started school. So can you share some experiences of how you managed?
For me, I just start a week early.
Mm-hmm.
I start by pushing their sleep time from 11 to 10:30 to 10. So I try to make it half an hour every day. So I start a week early and that helps. But this year, my older son who's in middle school,
mm-hmm.
he's kind of been pushing it and he's wanting to sleep late. But he's old enough to manage his own time.
Right.
So I kind of let him be. But he's anxious for school. He wakes up on time. So I've never had an issue.
I think the problem is a little more, you know, as they get into middle
mm-hmm.
school and as they get into high school, where not only are their rhythms all wrong for the school hours, but also they're rebellious, a little bit rebellious. And it's hard for them to wake up. Is there a way to give them an incentive to wake up? I'd like both of your opinions on this. Now, is there a way to make it, you know, rewarding for them to wake up? Is it okay to bribe them to wake up early? What do you say? Dr. Verma, why don't you take that first?
Incentive to wake up, you know, really it comes down to how, you know, the real question is how miserable is too miserable in the morning. I remember when I was a teenager, the mornings would be painfully difficult, you
mm-hmm.
know, and it comes down to how miserable do you want to feel during the day, during school, or if you want to feel less miserable. And, you know, I can remember when I was a teenager, that's a difficult that's a difficult conversation to agree to when you're a teenager. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of teenagers, what will happen is that it will simply take, you know, 2 or 3 weeks for them to be waking up for school time. Mm-hmm. They're a little bit unhappy, and then they will gradually adjust.
Mm-hmm.
For those you can kind of talk into before school starts, that, you know, it makes it that much easier.
Well, go ahead, Seema.
Yeah, Dr. Verma, I mean, it's interesting because I have two boys, and my older one, he's a preteen, and he is a child who just doesn't need enough sleep. He's fine. He sleeps by 11, but he's up at 6. The first week of school, I had a hard time not getting him out of bed because he was out of bed at 6 and he was ready to go to school at 7 in the morning. And that's who he is. And my younger one at the same time, 6:30, 6:45, time to wake up. Nope, he doesn't want to wake up. So I think it's child to child. They're so different.
They're very different.
Very different, yes. And I've just got used to just getting both of them into schedule just a week early, just to help me mm-hmm. to get the whole process going.
Is there a way to, can I give them coffee? Is a Red Bull, Mountain Dew, something like that to wake them up?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question, and I'm asked that often, and I'm also asked the opposite. Should I give my, you know, what about giving a sleep medication to a 14-year-old to help them sleep at night?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, sleep medicines at night and caffeine in the morning, they can help temporarily. They will help one day. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, the problem that these medicines, and I include caffeine as medicine, do not solve is that they do not change the circadian rhythm. They don't change the clock that, you know, is in all of our heads.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the problem will be they're literally the next day.
Right,
know?
Right. And, so what you're saying is it'll work as long as he's having the medicine or the coffee, but it'll stop working the moment you stop it.
Exactly.
Oh.
But at the same time, I mean, as a teacher, no, I don't want the kids coming in with Red Bull in them.
No, not that young. You're an elementary school teacher. We're talking about teens here. But do you notice, as a teacher, do you notice that there is a problem that kids are coming in completely dazed and, you know, not receptive to learning? And how do you cope with that?
No, I feel the first week there is a lot of excitement. There's a lot of excitement the first week. So mm-hmm. they're okay the first week. I see the whole tiredness seeping in the second week of school.
Ah, that's interesting.
That's when it hits them.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah.
Oh, so first week they're operating on adrenaline,
yes.
probably.
Uh-huh.
And the teachers and the schedules
right,
and everything. And
right.
we'll talk a little more about that. I think it's time for a quick break. We're talking about going back to school, the problems with that, and the challenges kids face. We'll be talking some more about it. This segment, we've been talking about sleep issues, and we still have Dr. Nitin Verma on the line after the break. So if you have a question about your child, please do call us, 510-770-1550. It's a live show, and we'd love to hear from you. We'll be back after a break. Welcome back to Parent Talk. We're back after a month-long break, and this is Vidya here again. And today we're talking about back to school, because at least in Fremont, school starting next week. And for many kids, at least it's been the first week of school. And I know as a parent that my kids face quite a few challenges when they have to go back to school after a long, long summer break. Today I'm talking to Seema Ramnathan, who's a teacher at Olivera Elementary and also a parent of two boys. And also with me on the phone is Dr. Nitin Verma, who's a sleep specialist at the Washington Hospital. Our call-in number is 510-770-1550 if you want to call and ask for their opinion on anything that we're discussing today. Before the break, we talked a little bit about how to get kids back into the sleep routine of school from the sleep routine at during the break. And one of the things that Dr. Verma suggested is that to create a very dark, soothing environment 3 hours before the suggested bedtime, so that the child is gradually feels compelled to go to sleep a little bit earlier than he or she has been used to during the school year, and that makes it a little bit easier. We also talked about whether it would help teenagers to have things like caffeine to, you know, get them going for those first few days. But Dr. Verma suggests that it may be only a band-aid, a quick fix, and it may not really last beyond those days that they are taking those. And our teacher said very categorically that she does not want kids coming in with caffeine in their system to the school. So in this segment, we're going to be talking a little bit more about regulating sleep. And one of the things that Dr. Verma has patients talking to him about is how to manage the weekday and weekend schedules, because Kids tend to do that. They have a tough time during the week, and especially teenagers, but also younger kids getting up very early in the morning and sleeping earlier. So when it comes to weekends, they just go bananas and go and sleep till 11. And then again, they have this little jet lag issue on Monday mornings. So Dr. Verma, this seems to be a common issue. And let me go to you first and ask, what would you suggest for something like that?
Well, you know, so this is something that's it's very common. And however, you know, it's very difficult to go to someone and say, okay, you need to sleep right now. And ultimately, you know, our brains are not designed to fall asleep on demand.
Mm-hmm.
However, you can control the waking part. So what will happen is that, you know, in general, it's good to wake up within the same hour,
mm-hmm.
Weekend and weekday. And you said the exact perfect word, jet lag, you know, because if someone wakes up more than 2 hours at a different time from day to day, you know, what they're going to experience is jet lag.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they sleep enough hours, they're going to feel tired. And that's part of the reason why Mondays are typically so difficult for people.
Absolutely. So what, again, you know, as a parent, I understand what I'm supposed to be doing, and I understand what the child is supposed to be doing. I don't think it quite works in that perfect way. Seema, what's been your experience with your kids? Are they good about keeping the same schedule on weekends as well?
No, now that I have a preteen, I find that Friday nights, no, it's very difficult for him to go to bed early. He wants to enjoy, he wants to chill, he wants mm-hmm. to sleep late. And then, of course, that goes into Saturday morning, which becomes all delayed. He doesn't want any activity scheduled for Saturday mornings or Sunday mornings. It's very mm-hmm. clear that it's his time.
Right.
And it's his sleep in time.
And you feel, you know, sympathy for that,
uh-huh.
right? Because
yes.
their school schedules are tough.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So then it becomes a problem. Then, of course, Sunday morning, if they wake up late, then Sunday night becomes an issue. So I try to control it by putting the shades up and things like that so that the room is bright and they are out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
So I try Sunday morning to control that so that Sunday evening is more easygoing and smoother. And I ensure Sunday evenings we don't have any plans. Things are very chill. Give them an early dinner. Get them to read books. Quiet time. Extremely important. Like mm-hmm. to be ready for Monday morning.
And one other thing I want to ask at this point is, at what age can kids sort of take that responsibility of waking up on their own? I have a 10-year-old, and I'm seriously thinking that maybe this is the year that I give her an alarm clock and say, you are responsible for waking up, and maybe start that a few days earlier so that she gets into the routine of setting an alarm and waking up on her own. Dr. Verma, would you have any insight into that as to whether it makes sense for a younger child to take that onus on himself or herself to wake up on their own?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea because it can start, you know, the practice and the habit of doing that. I think that's a very good idea. You know, one thing to realize is that, and here's something that's it's rather odd, but as children go from preteen into teenager years, they actually need one more hour of sleep than they used to get. So the odd thing is, you know, that a 13-year-old needs more hours of sleep than an 11-year-old. That sounds very odd.
Uh-huh.
But also what's happening is that they're turning into, even if you have like a 10-year-old child who's not a night owl, they may become one in 2 or 3 years. And all of these things start to build up. So don't be discouraged if a 10-year-old is monitoring and managing a alarm clock well, but then all of a sudden 3 years later it becomes difficult. You know, that there is a potential there. But it's always good to start the practice early. I agree.
But here's the thing. Sleep time certainly is a power issue in some ways in my family. In the sense, the 10-year-old now has been negotiating for slightly later and later and later sleep times as she's getting older, saying that I'm 9, now I should be able to sleep at 9. I'm 10, and now I should be able to sleep at 9:30. So there seems to be maybe a social construct here that makes kids think that when they're older, they get to sleep later or they get to sleep less. And it's very counterintuitive to what you're telling us, that they actually need more sleep as they go older. So would you have a strategy, and I want to ask this to you, to Seema, is there a strategy to sort of inform them that, hey, it doesn't mean as you get older, you sleep less and less or sleep later and later. But there seems to be something associated with sleeping late that is a cool grown-up thing. I don't know how exactly to deal with that.
Yeah, and as people will get older, you know, they're going to spend more time. And there's definitely social pressure to stay up as late as possible. You know, the later you stay up, the cooler you are. And that is definitely going to be a difficult thing with what they actually need.
Yeah, absolutely. Seema, do you have experience like that?
No, it is hard. And I remember talking to my son's pediatrician about it, that about his sleep anxiety, and he doesn't sleep well. I put him to bed around 9, and he would sleep around 10:30, 11. He would keep waking. I mean, he just couldn't go to sleep.
Mm-hmm. And he's wired up.
And then when I spoke to her, the first thing she asked was, how is he in the morning? I mm-hmm. said, he's up in the morning. So she said, you know what, maybe that's him. He just maybe needs less sleep. He's that kind of a child.
And let's not make it a battle at this time.
Yes, mm-hmm. So I feel both my kids are completely different people. So it depends on the child. If your child is tired, then maybe he or she needs that sleep.
Right.
And if they're not, they're ready, maybe they're fine with that hour, that many hours of sleep.
Right. And let's not keep maybe like a standard that everybody has to follow.
Yes.
It may not be mm-hmm. Applicable to every child. And I want to continue on that. Seema had talked about how her child is wired up and insomniac a little bit, you know, can't sleep even though they're tired, they're a little wired up, and she's doing all the right things in terms of providing a calm environment. Is this something to be concerned about, and how do you deal with it?
What your child is experiencing is a little bit uncommon for this age group. So let me caution the viewers that this advice may not be applicable to everyone. But yeah, you know, it is a very rare and uncommon thing if a child that age actually needs less sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And the way to determine that is by looking at energy levels during the day, attention and focus ability, plus how tired they may feel during the day. And it sounds like your child is not experiencing any of those things. So your child may literally mm-hmm. be the one out of a million that simply needs less sleep.
Wow.
Okay. Much more common.
Sometimes we think all our kids are
yes.
those one out of a million who need less sleep. Dr. Verma, I have one last question for you, and that is, what about naps? There are some kids who will come home because they've woken up early during the day, especially in the first few weeks of school. Their timing is all off. So when they come back from school, they're tired and they just want to take a nap. Would you recommend
yep.
it? Is there a way to control it?
I would not, especially if they're, you know, above the ages of 9 and 10, because usually what happens is that after school nap means that they're now not as tired and able to stay up later than they were before. And the best solution is, you know, it involves a little bit of, I think, misery, in the sense that in the first few weeks of school, they will be tired after they come home from sleep, but that will turn into their friend when they're able to sleep a little bit earlier and adapt faster because of it.
So just keep them up. Are there some
yes.
good strategies to keep them up when they're really, like, nodding off and they're tired and they're cranky? You know, what works? Exercise? Food?
Yeah, so exercise will certainly work, but if they're in the classroom, the best thing they could do is have as bright of an environment in the morning classes as possible. But certainly when they come home from school, being more active is going to be helpful for them. Absolutely.
Wonderful. With that, Dr. Verma, thank you so much for being with us today. I know you have to leave now, and we'll take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk some more with our teacher about some of the strategies she uses in class to deal with some of the learning losses and other challenges that kids face during back to school. You're listening to Parent Talk. Our call-in number is 770-1550. Once again, thank you, Dr. Verma, and we'll be back after a break. Welcome back to Parent Talk. This is Vidya, and our call-in line is 510-770-1550. Today's topic, we've been talking about going back to school and what are the challenges that one faces with that. Before the break, we talked to Dr. Nitun Verma, who's a sleep specialist. Wow, that's a tongue twister. There was a sleep specialist at Washington Hospital. And we talked about some of the tips to make your child's transition to a good sleep schedule for the school year possible. In this segment, we're going to be talking to our teacher, Seema Ramnathan, about some of the challenges academically that children face, especially since if your child is in a public school, they have a long, long summer break, and there is pretty much categorical studies showing that there is a lot of loss of learning that happens during the school year. And even though there are some parents who are pretty vigilant about having their kids go to some enrichment classes, we don't want summer to be like that. We don't want summer to be just an extension of the school year. But there is some loss of learning. I'm sure, Seema, as a teacher, you face that kids have forgotten what they learn.
Yes.
How does the school deal with that? And how do you want the parents to deal with that? And how do you want the child to deal with that?
It's a hard question because it is tough for the parents per se, because the school is 180 days of the whole year.
Right. And that's half
yes,
the year, really.
So, and especially the summer is such a long summer, and we don't have any summer school programs and things like that for the children. So, I mean, if the research shows that it's a 1 month loss in learning, in math and reading especially.
Wow.
And
how do you say 1 month? What does that mean, one month loss?
There is a particular research done with the test scores that has come in. So there are some kids who were tested just after before school ended and after school. So whatever they have learned over the summer is gone. They've learned over the summer, they forget, and then you have to restart the whole thing.
Right.
So that research shows that, and it's especially in the low socioeconomic kids, you see a two-month gap.
Wow.
Yes.
Why the difference?
Because they don't get any other enrichment program.
Oh, right? During
they
the school.
They just stay home or summer. Watch TV, that's it.
Right.
So there's a huge gap. So when you see from kinder through six, it's a huge, but if you put like one to two months per grade level,
right.
By the time they're in sixth grade, they're really behind.
And so they don't catch up?
They don't catch up, no.
Wow.
So that is the hard part for the teacher. So the first whole month is just getting them back. So most of our stuff is review, right? You're reviewing the old stuff from the previous grade to get them to where they should be. And then after that, it's a sudden big jump into the complete grade level process. And by the time the November report card hits, it's like, phew, there's so much to do and there's so much to catch up.
So if it's a review process, I mean, do you feel bad about that you're spending one whole month of the school year in a review process rather than just getting into the next grade activities?
Yes, we would like to just start off, right? Mm-hmm. Because we want to, our goal is our grade level standards.
Right.
We don't want to start with a review, but we have to.
We don't have
a choice because we have to see the kids who need it.
Right.
Maybe not all of them, but at least I'm sure there will be at least about 10 to 15% of the class that might need it. Again, it depends on school to school.
So, if you're a parent whose child has been sort of taking care over the summer, mm-hmm. they've been reading, mm-hmm. they've been doing some enrichment activities, that child is going to be bored during the review process.
Yes, but at the same time, see, the main loss, more than math and reading, is a whole procedural knowledge, right? That they have gained in those 10 months of being in school.
Mm-hmm.
So that procedural knowledge
what
is gone.
What do you mean by procedural knowledge?
Being in school for the 10 months, learning how to learn. Yes, mm-hmm. the whole mm-hmm. process. Mm-hmm. That has been lost over the summer. So that is the bigger loss.
Mm-hmm.
So to gain that, so that month of review is just to get back to school, get back to schedule. It's like just that we're talking about this show. Is back to school.
Right.
So the same thing is going on in the classroom with the teachers, gaining that whole procedural knowledge back. Learning to learn. How to get back into the whole process, following classroom rules, the classroom management, everything together, all together.
So what would be your suggestion to parents to make the whole process easier for the child?
Read. I mean, in the summer, just it's not just TV, it's not just video games. Just have some limitations, right?
Mm-hmm.
They need to have fun. Yes, I completely agree. But going to the library, reading, it doesn't necessarily have to be just books, workbooks, and just getting them to do 10 pages. No, not necessary.
Fiction is okay, too.
It can be just reading and talking to them. You can have a talk about the book.
Mm-hmm.
You can ask them what the book was about, what was your favorite part. You can ask questions. You can talk to your child. And even if it's math, it can be just talking sometimes. It can be just word problems. It's just coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't have to be sit down. I need you to do 10 pages. Just keeping it going.
Do a few minutes once in a while to just keep in shape, so to speak. And as a parent, I found the Khan Academy videos and problems pretty useful.
Yes.
There are many other online programs like that give the child an incentive to do it. They make it fun. They make it something where you're earning points and getting rewards. So I found that sort of was helpful, and that's free. It's free. So I want to tell all the parents out there that, you know, it's not something, if you can't afford to send your child to summer school, to a summer enrichment program, and that's why the child is home, all he needs is access to a laptop maybe for half an hour a day, and they can catch up on a lot of these things.
Yes,
so certainly.
And now with iPads and apps and things like that, it's become so easy.
Right.
Yeah, you can do 15 minutes of Ninja Math.
Ninja Math.
Yeah,
that sounds cool.
Yeah, there are some kids who love it, some kids who just don't like it. So there are so many different different kinds of apps. So it's again all right. depends on your child.
Right, right. But you would highly recommend that they not completely lose touch with academics over the summer.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is extremely important.
Absolutely. And the other thing that I wanted to touch on is when you said learn to learn, which is certainly dealing with the rigors of a schedule, right? The school is a scheduled thing.
Yes.
And even though in elementary school, they're staying in one class and the teacher teaches everything, it's still the brain has to get used to this compartmentalization and the thing. So can they do anything over the summer to sort of not lose that habit of scheduling completely?
It's difficult, right? Because that's what the whole summer is all about, having fun, relaxing, and not having a schedule. So it's difficult to put your child through that. But there are so many parents who are working, and kids go to camp, so they continue with the schedule. So they don't have a break. Whereas some kids who stay home, they get an easy, very relaxed schedule. So it's a tough call.
Yes. It's a tough call. But, you know, when I was growing up, there were some schools in India where you had summer homework.
Mm-hmm.
And you were given the books, or maybe it was a book report over the summer, or some workbooks over the summer.
Yes.
Public schools here don't have that practice. And is there a reason? Is it a budgetary issue? Or would you think that actually that might be a good idea for the future if something parents can suggest that, hey, you know, give our child something to do over the summer so they have this still continuity to the next school year.
You know, the teachers don't have to say it. The parents can also make it interesting. It can be, like I said, it's just about reading a book. You read a book with your child and discover the book, discover the author.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be as simple as that.
And that's all you need.
Yes.
You don't really need to.
It's the communication. It's the talking that needs to constantly happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's opening up your child's mind.
Mm-hmm. I know you're part of the school district, so let me ask you this. Is there any proposal of making the summer not so big and maybe distributing the holidays? We've had, I know schools in Los Angeles which do that, and they're very successful because the kids don't lose that learning.
Uh-huh.
So I'm sure parents wouldn't really mind that splitting the holidays up across the school year.
I myself would prefer a year-round school, right? That'll be a very nice system. There are many districts which have gone to a year-round school,
right,
which is, I think, 9 weeks and then a 3 weeks off. And it's wonderful. But I don't know if Fremont District is thinking about it.
I think we'll have to get the school superintendent here sometime.
Board members.
Or maybe we'll... Yeah, that's a good idea. We'll get somebody from the school board and talk about that. I think we'll do that another show. So here's another thing that you brought up that is a problem for teachers. It's an unknown. I would like to say not really a problem, is that we have these hyper-competitive parents who, August 31st, I think the teacher lists are out, and they go and they look at it and they see how their kids are placed vis-a-vis how their friends' kids are placed, and then it becomes a little bit of a battle and an ego issue perhaps to want the best teacher for your child. And I have to tell you, as a parent, it was eye-opening to me that there's such a network of information going around among the parents rating the teachers. You know, there may not be a formal process, but boy, the parents know who the good teachers are and who the preferred teachers are. So do you see that conflict happen where parents are coming and saying, I want my child to be in this class and I want my child to be in that class? How does the school deal with that?
You know, actually they can. They can do anything about it. Then once your child is set in a class, that is it.
Is that right?
Yeah, unless and until they can go, they can request with the principal and stuff like that. But at least in my school, it's very clearly said you cannot ask for a particular teacher.
Mm-hmm.
You can write a letter stating that your child has so-and-so needs. So can you place my child based on the needs of this my child?
So in a very generic way.
Yes, but you cannot ask for a specific teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, my only suggestion to parents is just keep an open mind. It's all about your attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, again, every child has a different experience. So keep it open. If you are going to say, oh my goodness, my child has got a horrible teacher, the child is going to carry that with her or him into the classroom.
So if you think that, don't say it.
Don't talk in front of your child.
Mm-hmm.
And keep it open.
You want the child to have the respect for the teacher.
Yes.
He's the authority figure in school.
Right. So keep it open. Keep it open. And you make your own judgments later on after a week or two of school. Go volunteer, be in the classroom, keep the communication open. So do those kind of things instead of just saying, oh my goodness, my child's year is all over.
So let's talk about volunteering. Mm-hmm. I think I do know that when back to school night happens, the teachers have these lists up where they're asking for volunteers for various activities. How crucial are volunteers to your classroom?
Extremely important, especially in public school. And now with our class size going up, there's so much going on and there's so much demand. I mean, so much on us teachers to get stuff going, and they want the scores to go up. And how do we get all this going? It's with the help of our parents. parents, mm-hmm. when they come in, they do small things. It might be just doing photocopying for us. It might be just making flashcards, small mm-hmm. things like that. But it goes a long way, because then I don't have to spend 3 extra hours back home when not helping my own children while doing my classwork and helping mm-hmm. my 30 students.
Right.
So it
certainly
call.
Takes away. So I think there are some parents who are a little intimidated by the fact that they may not be either language fluent
yes.
or academically
yes.
inclined. So there are jobs for parents
yes.
like that too.
Yes.
There's lots of simple things that
right.
they can do to help out.
We keep it open, and at least in our list we have like a clerical kind of job, and then there are certain jobs where that needs to be working with children. So mm-hmm. whichever they're comfortable and they can check mark, and then based on that we can assign them. And like I said, it's always communication. If they say I have only 1 hour a week,
mm-hmm.
and perfect,
you'll make it work.
Yeah, I'll make it work. I mean, at least there are certain teachers who want parents in the classroom. Certain teachers are fine. They're fine doing things themselves. So it's mm-hmm. again teacher dependent.
But teacher dependent. But offer is what you're saying. Offer and we'll find something for you to do.
Yes.
What about working parents? I think that we have a lot of regrets that we can't be there for our children. Is there stuff that even working parents can do to help out the teacher?
Yes, there'll be home projects, right? You can take something home and you mm-hmm. can do it from home. It can be just making booklets, copies, simple things like that. There'll be something or the other. But as a kid grows older, from intermediate grade on, there's not much work.
Mm-hmm.
Elementary, primary grades, K through 2 or 3 at least, there's a lot of work which can be done even at home.
Even at home.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And also donations. You know, we do have a request for donations. How dependent are you on the parent donations?
Extremely. Because, I mean, what I get from my school is $50 to start my year.
50?
50. 50. That's
oh my
all
gosh.
I have. If I change grade level, then it's $100. But otherwise, uh-huh. it's just $50.
Uh-huh.
And I've already spent, $400, $500 just setting up my classroom. And it's like, we buy all the stuff. So I ask the parents to give us $25 in the beginning of the year, because we buy all the stuff. They don't bring in anything except for backpack and their lunch bag.
Mm-hmm.
So to provide that, it's difficult. It's not
so
easy.
So your school is asking for money.
Yeah, we ask for money. We don't,
ask
kids
for supplies.
Because we have a wide range of kids. So we have some kids who have everything, some kids who don't. So
mm-hmm.
we don't want that happening. So we prefer to make it all uniform, especially in a first grade classroom and a primary level. We want it all uniform. So
right.
everything is the same. So it helps. So then we just ask for the donations and we buy
provide
all
the supplies.
Provide all the supplies.
And typically, what percentage of your parents donate?
It's about 65% to 70%.
Actually, that's not bad.
That's getting better. We really have to pound them. We have to constantly beg. So it's not easy. It's like maybe 45% to 50% is like right away.
Is it truly a problem of not being able to afford it, or is it just one of those things that just slips your mind and goes? And I know you work
yes.
in an elementary school that is not very affluent.
Yes, mine is a moderate
parent.
Poverty school, right? With 35% of the kids in a reduced or free lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And I find at least 25% of my kids can't afford it. And especially when it comes to field trips, I don't get any money. So it all goes from my classroom account, which the
mm-hmm.
PTA gives me, or whatever funds I have from the initial beginning of the year. So it all goes in from there. And I can tell a child you can't go for a field trip because you haven't paid the money.
Right.
So it's very
That's
hard.
An issue. And we've been having budget cuts
yes.
all along.
Yes.
Like every year you hear about one new program
mm-hmm.
that's
Correct.
Gone. There's no music.
Yes.
There's no sports.
Uh-huh.
Something or the
and
other is
we were at
happening.
20 kids. We went to 28. This year, we are at 30 kids.
You have 30 kids
yes.
in the classroom.
Yes, so it
That's
is,
certainly challenging.
Uh-huh.
And I can see how important it would be to have a parent
yes.
around
to help.
Just to do
yeah.
some of the more routine chores
yes.
so that you can concentrate on the
teaching.
Let's take another very quick break. And then when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about going back to school and the challenges. You're listening to Parent Talk, and I'm talking to Seema Ramnathan, who's a teacher at Oliveira Elementary. If you have a question for her, 770-1550. Welcome back to Parent Talk. This is Vidya, and you've been listening to us talk about going back to school and the challenges. We talked about sleep issues earlier. Then just before this break, we talked about loss of learning during the school year and what we can do about it. It may be a little late to do anything about it this year, but for next year, there are many things we can do. Find some online programs that the kids can do a few minutes every day, or take them to the library. Make sure they read during the school year and it's not all playing and video games. That helps. I think as a teacher, Seema Ramnathan, who's with us today, has shared that that really helps when the children come back in helping them adjust to the higher, more difficult next grade course load. In this particular segment, I want to ask a few more questions about going back to school. Especially in public schools, you have this issue of kids transferring from schools during the middle of the school year. Sometimes, I know my child was in one school for just a week and then she had to move back to her old school. I'm sure this is a problem you face quite a bit in your school. And how can parents make it a little bit easier? And what do you do in school to make it a little easier for them?
Yes, it is hard. And especially the first 2-3 weeks of school, we have the overload situation. So when we have the overload situation, the kids come in because their school is full and they're overloaded in other schools. So for the first
right.
3 weeks, it's a hard time.
Yeah, it's quite an upheaval for the child.
Yeah, so it takes about 2 weeks and then finally all the bodies are placed and then it's over with. But then that continues again later on with so many different kids who are coming in and getting out of the classroom. It's hard for the parents if you can avoid moving. When you've just started school and help you, if you can keep your child, it's the best thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can't, I know you don't have a choice. But for teachers also, it's not easy because you have to change the whole thing, the whole desk has to be changed, get the child adjusted, and starting the whole routine again.
Mm-hmm.
The whole first month or first few weeks of school is all about routine.
Right.
And then when a new student comes, it again starts with that.
Right.
So it is hard.
Well, do you assign like a friend to the new child? Because I think that is what parents worry about the most, that the cliques have already been formed and then when a child goes in and he or she won't have a friend to play with.
Yes.
How do you manage that in school?
You know, the kids are very, very open. They love. We talk to them. We tell them, if you were in that position, you were in a new school, how would you feel? So can you please help so and so? So you assign one of those good students to be a buddy, to take them around, take them to show the cafeteria, the restroom and things like that in the playground. So then they get used to it. So it takes a little while. Depends again on the child. If it's a very shy child, he or she takes longer. But if it's a child who's very social, then they
manage. The other adjustment that happens even within a school is that you have close friends during the school year, and then they get separated by the
next
lottery,
year,
you know, of the next year's assignments. And do you have those issues that kids are like pining for their best friend from last year and they're finding it difficult to make friends within their own classroom?
Yes, it happens. You know, it's a lot of, we discredit all the social emotional adjustments that happens, right? Not for the child in the classroom, you're like thinking, oh, okay, next grade level, starting a new grade, academics, it's all about academics. But no, that's where the social and the emotional adjustments is happening. For them, it's all about their friends, whom they are with, whom they're sitting next to. All those kind of issues happen. So it takes a little while, but we as teachers also have to stop and think that these are kids and they need that little space to understand each other. Only then they can function. How else do they function if they're not ready mentally, because they're having some baggage inside them,
right? Emotionally,
it's keeping them heavy.
What are the symptoms and how can parents tell that, oh, my child is not adjusting well? And I know you said earlier that the communication lines in a public school are really open to the teacher, so the parents can go to the teacher and say, hey, something's going on with my kid and I'm not sure. But how can they tell the child is not adjusting? What would you say are the markers?
You know, if the child is crying, right? You pick them up and they're crying, or in the morning they don't want to go to school. They're showing some kind of anxiety. It's as simple as that.
It's okay for the parent to come to you and say, my child is not happy.
Yes.
Tell me what's going on.
Yes, please. I mean, that's what we want to know. We want to hear from them. Please come and talk to us and bring your child after school. Maybe we can sit down and we can talk and we can see what's happening. Is it the school environment that's bothering? Is it something at home? Maybe they're being pushed and they're not ready. So they need maybe to wake up a little more earlier just to get them into the rhythm. So, it depends. It's not just about school. Something may be happening at home too.
Something may be happening on the playground something may be happening after school.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you don't know what is happening. So talk to the teacher. Go to the teacher. Make an appointment. Sit down and talk. Bring your child in so that they all can talk together and figure out the problem.
So, how frequent are these meetings? Are you as a teacher, are you comfortable with talking to the parents? Is it like, yes, it's an open door, make an appointment with me and come and see me? Or Do you have also a situation where parents are always there and you're like, okay, back off now. You really need to give your child some...
Yeah, it's true. In the primary grades, you see that very often because they come to drop and pick up the child. They are in your face. So you can't do anything about it. And there are certain parents who are in your face every day. There are certain parents who just come every once in a while to ask how their child is doing.
Right.
And in the intermediate grades, they just drop and pick. So you don't see them very often. But when in the primary grade, when you see them, you have to respect the teacher's time. They have so many students to handle, so many parents to handle. So try making an appointment. Mm-hmm. Tell the child, send an email. The teachers are very responsive to
emails.
Send an email to the teacher asking, can I meet you after school today or tomorrow?
Right.
Set up a time, and that way the teacher will be more than happy to sit down with you.
And this year, are we having the parent-teacher meetings back?
Yes,
we do. They've reinstituted?
Yes. Okay. It started last year, and it's going to happen again.
Continue
this year,
again
in November.
This year.
Yes.
That's great. And with that, we come to the end of today's show. I hope you enjoyed listening to the insights our guests had to offer. Thank you so much, Seema, for being with us today. And another thank you for Dr. Verma, who left us in the middle of the show because he was busy. We are going to be back with some more new shows next week. Keep listening to Parent Talk. And if you missed this show or you just caught the tail end of the show and want to know what else happened during the show and we're interested in learning about back-to-school challenges and how teachers and parents cope with them, please go to indiacc.org/parenttalk. That's indiacc.org/parenttalk. And we'll put up all the old shows there. And also, my email is radio@indiacc.org. That's where you send in your requests, feedback, and ideas. And bouquets and brickbats, both welcome. We'd like to hear from you. And once again, thank you so much, Seema, for being with us today.
Thank you, Vidya.
And we'll be back with a new show next week, live on Radio Zindagi. Sir.